I have tricks in my pocket, I have things up my sleeve, but I am the opposite of a stage magician. He gives you illusion that has the appearance of truth. I give you truth in the pleasant disguise of illusion. I take you back to an alley in St. Louis. The time is that quaint period, the 30s, when the huge middle class of America was matriculating in a school for the blind. Their eyes had failed them, or they had failed their eyes, and they were having their fingers pressed forcibly down on the fiery braille alphabet of a dissolving economy. In Spain, there was revolution. Here, there was only shouting and confusion and labor disturbances, sometimes pretty violent in otherwise peaceful cities, such as Cleveland, Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis. That's the social background of the play. The play is memory. Being a memory play, it is dimly lighted. It is sentimental. It is not realistic. In memory, everything seems to happen to music. That explains the fiddle in the wings. I am the narrator of the play and also a character in it. The other characters in the play are my mother, Amanda, my sister, Laura, and a gentleman caller who appears in the final scenes. He is the most realistic character in the play, being an emissary from a world that we were somehow set apart from. But having a poet's weakness for symbols, I am using this character as a symbol, as the long-delayed but always expected something that we live for. There is a fifth character who doesn't appear other than in a photograph hanging on the wall. When you see the picture of this grinning gentleman, please remember this is our father who left us a long time ago. He was a telephone man who fell in love with long distance. So he gave up his job with the telephone company and skipped the light fantastic out of town. The last we heard of him was a picture postcard from the Pacific coast of Mexico containing a message of two words, hello, goodbye, and no address. I think the rest of the play will explain itself. This is a section from the long scene between Jim and Laura. They have been dancing together, and they've hit a table and knocked the little glass unicorn off and discover that it's broken. Jim says, "We knocked the little glass horse over." Laura, "Yes." Jim, "Is he broken?" Laura, "Now he's just like all the other horses." "You mean he's lost his..." Laura, "He's lost his horn." "Doesn't matter. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise." Jim says, "Gee, I bet you'll never forgive me for that. I bet that was your favorite piece of glass." Laura says, "Oh, I don't have favorites much. It's no tragedy. Glass breaks so easily, no matter how careful you are. The traffic jars the shelves and things fall off them." "Still, I'm awfully sorry I was the cause of it, Laura." Laura says, "I'll just imagine he had an operation. The horn was removed to make him feel less freakish. Now he'll feel more at home with the other horses, the ones that don't have horns." Jim sits on the arm of a chair, faces Laura. "I'm glad to see that you have a sense of humor, Laura. You know, you're different than anybody else I know. Do you mind me telling you that? I mean it. You make me feel sort of, I don't know how to say it. I'm usually pretty good at expressing things, but this is something I don't know how to say. Did anybody ever tell you that you were pretty? Well, you are. And in a different way from anyone else. And all the nicer because of the difference. Oh, boy, I wish that you were my sister. I'd teach you to have confidence in yourself. Being different is nothing to be ashamed of, because other people aren't such wonderful people. They're 100 times 1,000. You're 1 times 1. They walk all over the earth. You just stay here. They're as common as weeds. But you, well, you're blue roses.